Hello, everyone. My name is Taylor.
And I'm Kelly.
And we are the co-hosts of Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. Episodes drop every other Monday, where we discuss the biggest Joshi news, review shows, and preview the hottest upcoming Joshi action.
So whether you're a new fan or an old fan, we've got something here for you at Jumping Bomb Audio.
Check us out on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome back to the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Jesse Collings. And joining me here, making her full debut, she had a cameo appearance previously on these shows, but it's Sarah from the Trish and Sarah podcast, which I'm sure many of my listeners are familiar with. But if you're not, it is an excellent podcast. And in particular, I was listening to their last episode where they discussed the Death Riders storyline. And I, while listening to it, I said, you know, because I'm a really selfish person at heart, I said, this is a great conversation. I wish I was there to partake in it. But these women need to stop talking and let me start talking over them because I have something to say. But with that in mind, I was like, I wanted to have Sarah on the show for a little while. And I know she made an appearance on my 100th episode. But Sarah, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you for having me. I am very excited to be here and talk Death Riders with you.
And Sarah, I don't know how much this comes up on your show, but for people who don't know, Sarah, of course, is a fellow Massachusetts person.
Yes.
Which are my favorite types of people to have on the show. And as I've said many times, I would like my guests to be exclusively New England people and people from Canada.
I'm comfortable with that.
Now, are you a true Massachusetts person? Or are you like someone like Maura who we adopted?
I'm very similar to Maura. In fact, Maura and I are both originally from Long Island. So, yeah. We have that in there, but I've lived here in Massachusetts longer, or as long as I lived on Long Island. So I think,
So we're reaching a tipping point.
I'm reaching a tipping point. Yeah. At this point I wouldn't go, you know, this is my home. Sometimes I think the home you pick sometimes means as much because you chose it, right? It's like your chosen family. Like I didn't end up here accidentally. I picked living here. I feel like that's got to count for something, right?
Are you a Yankees fan?
I don't know if we need to get into that at this time. I mean, if that's going to be a thing that's going to start us off on the wrong foot, then, you know.
No, this is news to me and extremely ironic when you consider how we first met.
Yes. But yes, I am a Yankees fan. I probably could show you my Yankees merch if I moved away from the computer
that's
screen.
That's okay. You're not the first Yankee fan. You're not the first Yankee fan.
I am not as podcast. I'm definitely not as into baseball as I was at one time. I used to watch every game religiously. I enjoyed listening to them on the radio. When the radio was free, right, the early days of the internet, and you could listen, you know, to the MLB broadcasts without any kind of subscription or anything like that, I loved that. But yeah, I am definitely a Yankees fan. I'm sorry.
This is shocking news to me because me and Sarah first met each other on like the ultimate Red Sox fan board. Which I know there are Yankee fans on there, but I just assume everyone is a Red Sox fan. So this is a revelation.
Yeah. What can I tell you? I'm so sorry. Ugh. Next time I tell you that I think the Death Riders angle is good.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap up the show. Thanks everyone for listening. Thanks, Sarah, for stopping by. Just end the episode. Honestly, like that would be an incredible bit.
It would be a pretty good bit.
Like, if the episode is just, like, 4 minutes long, and it's just, like, Jesse found out she's a Yankee fan and just ended the episode.
I would be pretty good. I would respect that, but...
Yeah, I'd have to. Anyway, we're talking about the Death Riders angle. I've talked about it a little bit, and I've actually written more about it than I've talked about it. Sarah, of course, you have been very vocal about it. Of course, I listened to your latest episode with Trish, where you guys talked about the angle. I mean, in general, I am not a fan of the angle. And I was thinking about this when I was going out for a little stroll right before we recorded this episode, which kind of helps me formulate some of my thoughts. And one of the things I was thinking were There are two reasons I don't like this angle in the storyline. I mean, the general reason I don't like it is because it's bad. It's poorly executed. It's not entertaining to me. I don't think it's really a productive angle from a lot of different perspectives. I don't like it because it's not a good angle primarily, but
yeah,
there are two kind of specific reasons for it. And I think the first reason is it is not a creative angle in terms of what we're seeing on screen. This is the same kind of angle we've seen not only in AEW many times, but just across all of wrestling, right? A heel yep. stable is, you know, holds the world championship and they interfere in a lot of matches, and every time they're out there, it's like playing a numbers game where they beat people up, and it's just simply not that exciting to me because it's largely just a very repetitive, uncreative angle. And I'm in wrestling, I don't need everything to be super creative or super innovative. I think a lot of times when you try to do that, it doesn't work out. But to me, I'm so sick of seeing just this type of angle across all spheres of wrestling. I know our mutual friend Mike Ford has called it John Moxley's House of Torture, which is a really apt description of a lot of the feeling about these matches, where you're just waiting for the ref bump, you're yep. waiting for Wheeler Yuta to come in, you're waiting yep. for Claudio to come down, and Marina Shafir to hit someone with the briefcase. And that is a trope that has been in New Japan for a long time, obviously, with House of Torture. It's been in WWE for decades.
Yep.
And we've seen it plenty of times in AEW before, too. And that's one of the, like, I think the big keys here is that the whole concept of this like storyline is a stale idea. Even if you want to argue that the Death Riders as a group are like a relatively new act, but the actual content of what we're seeing on screen is a stale idea that's been done to death. And I don't see a huge demand for more of that coming from wrestling fans.
I agree with you that it's a stale idea, but I also think that it's a stale idea that's been executed really, really poorly. Like, and I probably would be somebody who would say, and you know this, that I didn't hate this at the very start, right? I thought they had something there, but it's amazing in that it's like, to me, it's like a choose your own adventure book where they made the wrong turn every time. Like, here's two choices. You could do this or this. It's like, oh, we're going to do the bad one, right? We're going to do the least creative one, the one that damages our baby faces the most, the one that does the least to get anybody over. And then we're just going to keep doing that like repeatedly in the same format over and over again. And I feel like that's the part that's like so surprising. Like you said, I don't have a problem with tropes. I think tropes sometimes can be helpful. Like sometimes you want to just see a comforting story that you've heard before, but this like goes beyond that into just shitty execution, like across the board, that I'm kind of surprised by, but also irritated by, because I think for me, like I'm not a particularly creative person. Like, I have a podcast. I don't.
Yeah. How dare you say that in the content creation sphere that we live in?
I'm way better at critiquing than coming up with my own stories. But even I can look at a bunch of these Death Rider things and be like, well, if they had done this and this, it would have been a lot better. And I'm not even the best at that kind of shit. Like, there's people who are like, Tunnel Talk are way better at coming up with like creative ways to do shit. And I'm just kind of like, yeah, but this sucked. Like, you know, and I kind of went back like mentally, and I even took some time today to go back through like how they started this and where they ended up to be like, oh, they made this choice here. And like, it's amazing how many times they diverted away from the most interesting thing that they were doing in the angle.
Yeah. And to me, like the staleness, I want to touch on that with a major point, which is like the Blackpool Combat Club had been on screen presence in AEW for years before the Death Riders formed. And really, yes. There's not a huge difference between the BCC and the Death Riders. Their motivations were kind of the same. It's largely the same people. There's no Brian Danielson, but Mox is still the leader. Claudio's in it. And it's like Wheeler, Yuta, and Pac.
Yep.
So Pac is in it too. Like, but it's not like this is like really a new act that has been on AEW TV. It is a regurgitated form of something that had already been around and kind of, I don't think anyone ever said the BCC was really stale, but it kind of reached its expiration date. And so they changed it, but they didn't really change it all of that much. And if anything, I feel like the BCC's like character and motivations were a lot more clear than the motivations of the Death Riders. The BCC were like, we're an elite group of wrestlers. We train super hard together and we're here to win all the titles and show that our type of wrestling is the best, which is a very simple, very sports-based presentation. And I think it worked. The Death Riders are kind of like that, but they're a lot more vague in what their motivations are. It's like Moxley cutting these long, like I've called them Wyatt-esque promos where they never really have a point. They kind of sound interesting, but they're really like, there's no really like hard thesis that backs up all of what they're saying. It's just Moxley's frustrated by a bunch of people not reaching his level, and he wants them to reach his level, but also he's going to cheat all the time, so they aren't never really going to reach his level. It just feels like the execution of the storyline hasn't been clear to the audience. And on top of that, it's just a group that has already basically been on our television for years and years.
Yeah. I think that's a big piece of it. Like, you're not, you know, obviously Pac is there and that's a little bit more fresh, but the dynamics of the group haven't even changed at all, right? It's not like, it would have been at least interesting if somebody like Yuta had taken over and been in charge, right? Or you souped Claudio in some way, but like Yuta's doing the same pin eating that he was doing before. They abandoned all the stuff that was interesting with him. Like, they're not really even touching on it anymore. And you know, we keep getting these promos and these backstage segments from Moxley where he's like, you don't understand, but like, he never actually explains it. So it's like, we don't understand what are you doing? Like, you know,
it's frustrating even from like, you don't even have like the, at least I haven't seen them. You don't even have like the crazy headcanon,
right?
Like pieces that, or fans are coming up with explanations for what Moxley is doing. It's just kind of like rambling. I've said this before, like I'm super disappointed in Moxley as a performer over the last 6 to 8 months. I think like he came back, he got the world title. The whole promotion is built around him as a central character, and I just don't feel like he has risen to the occasion. And for a guy that really, I think, has a well-earned reputation as a really meat and potatoes kind of performer, in the sense of everything about his character and his wrestling style has been direct, easy to understand, clear. The fact that this is what he's doing is really shocking to me. Like, I don't know where this all came from in terms of Moxley going out there and never really exploring his character that fully and not making his motivations clear, and just also just doing like a bunch of like all of his matches being like fucking attitude era run-in bullshit, which seems like something he would be totally against as a performer. Yet I'm led to believe that he has been pretty hands-on in what's going on with the storyline.
Well, do you get the impression in watching it, because I feel like in going back and like looking at like, okay, this is how it started, this is where they took a turn here, do you get the impression that it's the whole setup has changed since they initiated it, right? Since that what their original plan was has been modified or watered down or changed in some way? Because I think I could point to a few places where I would probably argue that it has, but I'm curious about how you feel about that.
I look, when you say that, like, I'm like, what, I would be interested in knowing what those points are, because I don't really see that necessarily. Like, I like the way it started.
Yeah.
But that was because I liked the Bryan Danielson bag angle, but I didn't like the follow up on that wasn't interesting to me. I think the whole feud with Orange Cassidy and then the four way feud, I think, was a complete waste of time for everyone involved.
Well, the four-way feud was just there to get a place where Copeland could return and everybody would cheer for him. Like, that was very clear from, like, the beginning of that feud for the four-way, that there was no, you know, and if you go back and look, like, not a single one of those three guys got, like, they had a couple backstage promos, but there was no in-ring, there was nothing. The closest you came to that was when Orange Cassidy had that collision where he went out and confronted the Death Riders, and then that ended up interrupting with them trying to poison him, and it interrupted a FTR promo. And then that was how we got to FTR so that we could then get to Copeland. Like, that's the stuff that like pisses me off the most about this angle. Like, not that it's not good, but like, you're actively undercutting people to like give other people like opportunities that I like question whether or not they need them. You know?
Yeah. I definitely think that's a huge part of this. And I want to get into that in a second.
I'm jumping ahead.
no, it's I have my Tony Khan headcanon of the way I want this podcast to go, but I haven't made that clear or with anyone, including my performers like yourself. So, well, that and like, so I'm a fan of Moxley. I'm a fan of AEW, but I am confused by the storyline. I watch every week. I cannot really cleanly summarize what his character's motivations are. And he's been on screen for months and months.
Yeah.
I kind of think we can say, like, I guess I'm hesitant to say, like, oh, this angle started one way and then it ended up being something else, because I feel like Mox's character at least has been consistent. Like, he hasn't, he's been vague the entire time. So it's hard.
He's been vague, but there are things that he was clear about at certain times, right? Like, and you can also see from the people that were involved at the beginning, right? You had that whole thing about, like, you know, people need to step up and people are too complacent. And then the focus of that end shot of Wrestle Dream and the beginning of the Dynamite afterwards was Darby, Orange Cassidy, Hook, and Daniel Garcia, right? So it seemed like, and then at the beginning of that next Dynamite, they also added in Mark Briscoe and Adam Cole and who's the other one that I had? They had in there. I can't remember, but like
It wasn't Kyle.
He was kind of in the background of other stuff, but it was Briscoe. Yeah, whatever. They added that in, and that was like, okay, these guys are going to be the focus. And for a while, like, Daniel Garcia was the focus, and it did seem like they were doing stuff with Private Party and that. And then as soon as Orange Cassidy accepted that he was going to be involved in the match with Mox, everybody, one of these people, disappeared. And then it became about Orange Cassidy and Yuta a little bit. Like, and that to me was like a switch where, like, all of a sudden now this is about something different. And now you end up at the place where you're at now, where you have Copeland telling Moxley in promos that, like, he doesn't respect the older generation and he didn't work hard enough. And meanwhile, like, all the stuff about the young people has gone completely and disappeared. Right. Yeah. So that when I talk you about that,
you mentioned that I had forgotten about the whole, like, Daniel Garcia, like, parking lot kind of, like, stuff at the beginning. And you're right. That was very much like, the young guys, this is going to be an angle that eventually puts over the young guys. And maybe that is still what's going to happen, but that plot has been completely lost in terms of the on-screen thing over the last
few months. And Mox isn't talking about that stuff anymore, or not as much as he was. Mm-hmm. Like, it's, you know, now it's gone to more generic heel promos.
Yeah. Well, I also think, like, I want to get to, like, FTR's involvement in this. First, I want to stick on Mox for a second, actually, first. I've kind of hinted at this before and talked about this before in terms of, like, Moxley's role in AEW going forward. Mox as a top guy is stale.
Yeah.
Like, he's a really good performer. He has been probably the most valuable person in terms of consistency and reliability in AEW since the company first started. I don't necessarily think the company would be better off without him at this point, but Moxley as the world champion, as the center of focus for everything in AEW, to me, that is not a productive use of what that position is. When you have so many other people on the roster who have, I think, would gain a lot more from being in the kind of position Moxley is in. I think Moxley is an established guy. He's a made man. And that's good for the purpose of the angle, right? In some ways, you want the guy who's eventually going to put over someone else to be a very established made man in that kind of way. But, like, Moxley cutting promos, Moxley working main events and things like that, that's something that the company has been doing for 5 years. That's a long time in wrestling. It maybe doesn't feel like necessarily as long of a time because WWE has had the same main eventers for 10 years in some cases. They've gotten better in the last few years, but for a long time, it was like John Cena and Randy Orton main eventing their 100th pay-per-view because these are two guys that have been the main event for 15 years.
Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, but, like, 5 years is a long time for someone to be a featured main event player in AEW, and I don't feel like this is a... And like I said, I just think he's stale as a top guy, and he's kind of stale in AEW if he's not going to significantly reinvent himself. And I don't think this is that. If anything, it's kind of like he's watered down his persona in a lot of ways.
See, I want to push back on this a little bit because I feel like you can look at some of the ways in which when Moxley came back, he did change. And I don't know that they're necessarily productive ways, but I think he was trying to do that thing that like the Young Bucks did with the Sting angle, where he came back. He didn't have music that everybody can rock out to or sing along with. He was trying to do straight heel stuff. He was trying to do stuff that like the audience wouldn't enjoy. I think he did try to change his presentation to be more of a genuine heel in a way that he did not do even when the BCC were heels. Right. So like in that regard, like, I don't think it was a significant change. I don't think it was a huge change, but I think you can kind of point to a few things that he was doing to try and be like, I want the audience to boo me. And I think that you could say that maybe that was the first time he genuinely was working for that since he'd been in AEW.
Yeah. Well, there was a discussion, right? He was like inspired by Romper Stomper.
Yeah.
Like this new character was going to be like based on this neo-Nazi character from a 90s movie, or at least inspired by it, which I guess thankfully we didn't get the whole, he didn't go whole hog down that route. But I guess that's probably fair that there was an attempt, and his character kind of devolved over the last few months,
yes,
as opposed to adding more depth.
Yes.
Which is kind of the opposite of what you wanted to happen. And then the other aspect of this before we get to Cope is like FTR inserted to this main event feud, and those guys are stale as fuck.
They like, are so fucking stale.
They have not been interesting or really good in a long time, it seems like. And their characters haven't evolved. Dax cuts the same promo he's been doing for the last 5 years. It is like, though, it's like, it's not just Cope, as we'll get into Copeland, but like, those guys to me bring nothing to the table.
No.
As like, other than they're Copeland's friends. Man, those guys are good at being friends with top guys with a lot of backstage sway.
That's what they're really comfortable at. Well, yeah. And the other thing I think that irritates me is that this is not a relationship that like we watched unfold on television. It's very similar to the way FTR were with CM Punk, where it was like, if you paid attention, you knew they were friends backstage and you knew these were people you cared about. But if you watched the television show, they just showed up one day, right? As buddies. You never saw that develop or saw that actually like happen. And with Copeland, we got like, what, a 15-second TV promo. It was like, we're friends because we're friends. And it's like, that's fine, but narratively it's really fucking boring, right? Like, okay. I'm not exactly the biggest fan of FTR lately. I think they're incredible wrestlers, but they don't wrestle that much anymore. And like character-wise, they've, like you said, they've done nothing.
Like, think about whether you have liked what they've done or not. Think about how much the Young Bucks have changed over the course of five years in AEW.
Yep.
About how their characters have changed, what they've done to present themselves differently. And that's because, like, we don't want to get stale. We want to keep trying new things and doing stuff.
Right.
Chris Jericho's a perfect example. Obviously, Chris Jericho is almost, like, obsessively, constantly tweaking what he's doing. But, like, think about people who have been with the company for a very long time.
Even then, Darby Allin and Orange Cassidy are not the same characters they were when that show started. They've changed much more subtly, but they're very different. And like, I think that's one of those things with FTR where it's like, there's no thought, like I genuinely want to go up to some of these guys and be like, what does your character want? And what do you think, who do you think they are? And like, I guarantee you FTR have not, like FTR's biggest achievement is being friends with a more famous wrestler. Like that's all they seem to want to do. Like, and it's just, it's stale and boring.
Yeah, my character is friends with an old WWE star.
Yeah, with somebody who has more political capital than I do. Like, it's just, I don't know. I'm over it. And like you said, the staleness of FTR has not helped with their addition to the, you know, because it's not even like they're fresh faces, that they're people who weren't involved at a top level angle or somebody who was underutilized, right? It's just fucking FTR doing the same thing they've done with no interesting characters, nothing. We had that brief tease of a heel turn with the Outrunners and that disappeared.
If Private Party was teaming up with Copeland, that would actually make a lot more sense for the angle.
Yes. Yes.
Like you'd have to explain it why they would be friends, but the whole idea would be like, you know, we're going to help out Copeland. You personally insulted us, called us out for not being better.
Right.
Now, and you would actually also be promoting a younger team that could use the boost as opposed to FDR, who are just kind of been happy to be in their place. And to me, those guys just haven't shown the kind of commitment to evolving in an interesting way. I still think they're good. They're good wrestling.
They're very good wrestlers. Absolutely. But
there's not a whole lot there to get me excited about anything that they're doing anymore, because they've also been around in this company for 4 or 5 years, and they were basically the same characters before they were in AEW.
They were not any different as heels. You know, there was slightly different, like at least
no,
the Pinnacle.
Their heel and babyface turns have not really meant anything.
Right.
In terms the same, of like what their characters are.
That's the same thing. Like you can point to a few, like to me, the least successful or the least interesting wrestlers to me are the ones that are the same, whether they're heels or baby faces, right? And it, like, Ricky Starks was a perfectly good example of this. There was no difference in that guy's character from his heel turn to his face turn, right? And you can even see this with, like, some of the promos that were getting cut from FTR. Like, they, like, you know, I mean, obviously he talked about the daughter more, but, like, I guess, like, the thing that I want to touch on, because you said if they joined up Cope with Private Party, right? That's the kind of thing that AEW used to be good at, is putting older wrestlers with newer, younger faces or fresher faces. And like, that's just disappeared. Like that's gone completely. And I think it's a huge loss.
If Sting came back now, he would not be paired with Darby Allin.
No, he wouldn't.
I would like to think he still would be, but it'd be funny if he wouldn't.
Right. Well, you think about even Christian Cage and Jungle Boy. Like that worked out great. That was fantastic for the period that it was. But like, you know, they wouldn't do that now. And I think that was a thing that when it happened, it helped the people who you'd seen on television for a while, or maybe not say whatever, they felt fresh because they were in a new pairing or a new dynamic. It wasn't the same shit they're doing, which I think is the biggest problem of a lot of their AEW's new talent, is that they're just doing the same shit they used to do in whatever company they came from. You know, how is Hurt Syndicate any different now than they were in WWE? They're not, right? How is Will Ospreay any different now than he was in New Japan? He's not, right? Even Okada, you could say Okada's leaned more into being like his stupid self, right? Even though people dislike that part. But like, at least he's doing something slightly different.
Yeah, I would say Ospreay's different in terms of like, he is a really clear and obvious American TV wrestling babyface in a way that he wasn't in New Japan.
That's fair.
He's much better like babyface promo guy than he ever was in New Japan. I feel like he has been, I would say he's different than he has, but I think that's the point is still the same, and that these people they're not comfortable changing all that much, I guess.
Yeah.
And part of it is also, I think, when we talk about a lot of what's going on, is that a lot of these performances are good. Like, the Hurts, you mentioned the Hurt Syndicate. Like, I like the Hurt Syndicate, but you're right, there's not really that much different than them as the Hurt Business. But they're good, so it's tolerable. Like, even Copeland in his, I would say, like, in just Copeland's overall performing level is still high. So, like, it's not going to come out and be shit. So it's okay. So it feels more okay than it really is. But when you really drill down, like, what are we progressing? What are we doing to get over?
Right.
To me, Copeland's involvement is really problematic because it just hammers home a lot of poor decision-making AEW has done in terms of who are they presenting as the absolute top stars of the company.
Yep.
You know what this really gets back to, Sarah?
What?
This gets back to the decision to not have Hangman and Swerve main events at Wembley Stadium and have Hangman beat Swerve. This is where it all changes.
I'm not going to argue on that one with you. Like, Trish and I have been beating that drum since the spring.
So, last several years, AEW has invested a lot of time and energy to making credible main event stars out of people who previously were not seen as that. We saw that with how they elevated MJF. We saw that with how they elevated Hangman Page. We saw that how they elevated Swerve with these long storylines that effectively positioned new stars at the top of the card in AEW. And it was really successful in terms of creating an exciting new product. They also used the Moxleys. They used the Jerichos. They used the Stings really appropriately as well.
Yes.
We go back, we get to Wembley Stadium, and the idea is like, we're going to do this Bryan Danielson retirement tour. We're going to put his career on the line. He's going to win the title at Wembley Stadium. It's going to be a big grand hoorah, which in a vacuum, just that event did work, right? Danielson won the title. He got a big pop. It was a great moment. People all went home super happy. Wow, great job, Brian Danielson. But that was the beginning of what has been, since that day, a really shifted focus away from the new and exciting talent and onto the old established ex-WWE guard that isn't really going to move anything forward.
Right.
And the consequence is that guys like Hangman Page, MJF, Swerve, not that they haven't had anything to do necessarily, but they have been in the mid-card, not out of the world, out of the world title picture, with the exception of Page randomly being in a four-way, which was disrespectful to him in a lot of ways, I think. But we do this, so instead of Swerve and Hangman, it's Bryan Danielson, because he had to win the title again for some reason. And then who does he put over when he loses the title? Allegedly, it was supposed to originally be Darby Allin before this idea. That's the rumor, is that it was originally going to be Darby. But it ends up being Mox.
Yep.
For some reason. Mox hadn't been around in a while. Allegedly, it's never really been reported out in public, but I've heard rumor. I'm not like a backstage rumor guy, but I heard from people who were connected mainly from the New Japan side that Moxley didn't really like AEW and was trying to get out of his contract. And those rumors went away when Moxley suddenly became the world champion and had the entire company built around him, which I've always said is kind of suspicious, like, to me, in sense of like from a guy who has a reputation, I think, for being a selfless wrestler. It was a pretty selfish decision to be like, oh yeah, I'll come back to work as long as I get to be world champion and get to keep the title around me. But that's all based on rumor, so I don't want to get into that too far, although that will probably catch people's attention. But Moxley, you know, Danielson and Moxley is the program now, right? So
yep.
No Swerve, no MJF, no Hangman, no Jay White, none of these Ospreay, any of these younger guys, they haven't been on American TV for 20 years. It's Moxley and it's Danielson. That's where they do the angle. They do the bag angle. Moxley beats Danielson. And then they do the Orange Cassidy feud. They do the four-way feud, which you said was kind of like basically killing time and creating reputation, an excuse for Copeland to come back. And now Copeland is the really, really the big focus, and the main challenger is now Copeland. And he's not only is he the focus, but he's also doing this almost gimmick where he's like, I'm actually the real old guy, and Moxley, you're just a kid.
Yep.
And it's like, what the fuck are we doing right now with our world title? Like, this is so regressive from a booking perspective, in my opinion, when you spend all this time and effort creating a new class of under 35 stars, and yet the entire main event picture in the world title is built around Danielson, and who's no longer around, Moxley and Copeland. And it's like, even the guys that are kind of like, with the exception of Wheeler Utah, all those guys in the Death Riders are not new stars. I guess Marina Shafir can be considered a new star, but like, it's Claudio. He's a known quantity of where he's at. Pac, known quantity of where they're at. Great wrestlers. I like seeing them, but not new guys. Copeland, obviously, known quantity. FTR, we just talked about it. They've been in the same spot for the last 5 years. Who's getting the rub from this? Eventually, maybe that's the case. That eventually Darby's going to come back from Mount Everest and literally come back from Mount Everest and beat Moxley for the title, like this summer, maybe. Cool. But for now, we have months and months of TV time and at least one whole pay-per-view cycle where we're like booking like it's Raw in 2013.
Right.
As opposed to AEW in 2025.
Well, I think the other thing to point out, too, is that when you look at what Copeland was able to work with, right, and we talked a little bit about the promo time at the beginning, and I think you can look back and say that Orange Cassidy definitely got a decent amount of promo time in his one-on-one feud with Moxley. I don't think it was like, you know, I don't think the detriment was significant. But if you look at like the build to the four-way at World's End, like I said, none of those guys had in-ring promo time. I don't think that Moxley's group got beaten. And then Copeland rolls up and now, you know, he's doing in-ring stuff. He's doing like saves to get cheers. He's doing, like they've beaten FTR and Cope's team, beat Moxley's team like twice. Like it really did nothing but underline, like, these are the important stars. These other guys are like just secondary. Like, you're supposed to pay attention to these guys. And I feel like that doesn't help in the long run. Like, you know, Copeland has never been somebody who's drawn, like, he gets cheers, but he's not like somebody who draws an audience or draws like people to watch his shows. Like, he's not out there like bringing people in. And like, and Moxley is somebody who has like crafted a lot of ratings in AEW, but he has been more fresh at times. This is kind of like a stale thing. So I don't know, like, not to mention the fact that, like, you have to have people to cheer for, and you have to have people that you want to see be successful. And, like, you're going to do all of this. Like, where's Darby? If Darby is the end game, like, why isn't he physically around? Like, why aren't we at the least in the background, like, building him up or, like, making a big deal? But he's just disappeared completely. And, like, that part also hurts you because, like, what's the point of all this? And I would argue, like, I think you could say, well, Darby's going to get the rub and Darby's going to get built into a main eventer. I don't think Darby needs to get built into a main eventer. I think you could arguably put him in the main event now and he'd be there. Like, I don't know that I think that, like, Darby needs some kind of, like, special program to make him into something.
I mean, I think it's just, I want to couch all, like, long-term thoughts about the Death Riders, and that eventually the plan, supposedly, and would seem to be from kind of how they've handled it so far, Darby is going to beat Mox, which would be, I think, a productive use of the world title and trying to establish Darby further. I think you have a point where Darby doesn't necessarily need to go on like a 1-year hero's journey booking adventure in order to be a main eventer. I think a lot of work had already been put in to getting Darby over as a top guy. But I think it just, overall, this feud hits the wrong notes in terms of what the company should be trying to be. And we talk about that a lot with AEW, and I'm annoyed by, like, when people talk about what are the themes of AEW, what does AEW stand for? What is AEW in a God? That's a huge part of this angle, right? Is this is for the soul of AEW. This is
so fucking stupid.
Again, like, something nobody cares about that shit. And I certainly don't. I'm so tired of anything that has anything to do with this is for the heart of AEW. I'm really the soul of AEW, which they have turned that off a little bit, especially. But when Copeland first came back, it was like, okay, so Adam Copeland is the
soul of AEW.
Soul of AEW.
FTR are the fucking soul of AEW.
At least FTR had been there for a while. Like,
sure, but like, you know. I don't know. I'm to me, that's one of those things where it's like, you know, I think it rings hollow and it rings fake because it's not, it's like that big disconnect between sometimes what AEW thinks its fans want and what its fans actually fucking want. Like, they're different things sometimes. And I think you can look at somebody like, you know, Adam Copeland getting all of this stuff and being like, you know, I think it's nice. Like, it's fine. Like, I don't think AEW fans are opposed to it, but I don't think AEW fans were like at home going, oh my God, I can't wait till Adam Copeland shows up. This is going to be incredible. I really hope he gets a lot of TV time.
It's really, and it's really frustrating in the sense of what else this roster has in terms of if they were in a situation where they were really light on potential main event stars and the cupboard was bare.
Sure.
It makes sense to do a long program like this between two established stars while you kind of do stuff in the undercard to try to elevate somebody else. The issue is that AEW is not in that position. AEW, not only does AEW have plenty of these guys, but they need people that kind of need to have the world title or at least be in the main event and picture right now. Just think about it from an equality standpoint for terms of who do we want to establish as our top guys going forward. So it's like, to me, if I'm running AEW, not necessarily this is stuff that doesn't necessarily have to happen, but it's what I would like to see happen over the next few years, like next 2 or 3 years. I'd like to see Hangman have another world title run. That's substantial. I'd like to see Swerve have another world title run. That's substantial. I think MJF could get the title again. And I think reestablish it. They don't necessarily need to do that. I know some people were wary based on what happened to his last world title run, but I think it could work and would be useful, a good use of the time and the effort.
I don't disagree.
I think Ospreay eventually needs to win the world title and have a world title run. And it's like, you're going to run out of time to do all of this.
Right.
in a way. Other guys are going to get colder. People are going to get frustrated that they're not getting the kind of
guys are going to leave.
Yeah, the guys are going to leave. And that's not even mentioning like people like Darby, who you'd want to eventually make a world champion, or like Kyle Fletcher, or if you wanted to make Okada your world champion. Like, there's so many options for stuff that they could do that would be fresh and exciting, even though, okay, Hangman was the champion before. Well, this version of Hangman wasn't.
Right.
And his character is radically different.
Right. Well, that's the frustrating part when you look at like you look at Kenny Omega coming back, right? We also, you saw his promo from the Dome, like after that show, and the character that he was presenting. Imagine that character coming back to a fucking heel Hangman champion. Like, Jesus Christ, that would have been an incredible dynamic. That would have been a fascinating story. Like, no, it's, you know, we got Copeland and there's a fucking belt in a box, right? Like, it's
frustrating because there's so much potential there, and we're seeing it wasted through the storyline that has a bunch of problems. It doesn't feel progressive or productive at all.
It feels lazy.
Yeah. And I think the performances have been lazy, to be honest. Yeah. Like, as I said, one of my issues with Moxley, and one of the reasons I kind of get uncomfortable when people say like, oh, well, Moxley wanted it to be like this and then it changed and now it's not like that. And I was like, I get it. We can blame RJ City for being involved, or whoever the boogeyman is behind the curtain. That's responsible for the things we don't like. But at the end of the day, Moxley's the one coming out, cutting mid promos and having mid matches.
Right. Right.
It's a performance.
I agree with that. I'm not going to dispute that.
So I've kind of like, I really don't want him to get left off the hook. And I honestly think he himself has dodged so much criticism from a lot of people, because people like Moxley and respect him as a performer, which I do too. I'm a huge fan. Vote him for the Hall of Fame every year. Like, giving him Wrestle of the Year awards and things like that. Like, I am a huge Moxley fan, but I got to call a spade here. That guy's not been good. And it's been hugely disappointing. And I think a lot of people are having a hard time. So like, he, to me, is not getting a lot of heat. This is like Andy Reid. Like, I think Andy Reid totally fucked up the Super Bowl. I don't think that team came out prepared at all, but like, Mahomes took all the shit the next day for playing poorly. And not that Mahomes should be, he should be criticized because he did not play well, but Andy Reid just kind of sitting there, and I'm like, Andy Reid took a lot of shit. Why aren't people calling out Andy Reid, people like Andy Reid or whatever? But I feel like kind of the same way about Mox, where it's like Moxley's performances are really bad, and like, he's been so frustrating for me to watch as a fan of this company.
Yeah.
And I think that he deserves so much shit, especially if we believe that he has creative control over this angle, which I do. He certainly has some creative control.
I agree. Like, yes, I think that's clear. I don't think it's 100%, but I do think I think the thing that I'm shocked by is how, like, I think back to like the Moxley talk is Jericho, like right after he debuted in AEW, and how angry he was talking about the shit that he had to do in WWE.
Exactly.
And the gas, right?
Yeah.
And then I look at like, we've duct taped the Rock and Roll Express and Moxley is wearing a balaclava, and I'm like, this is the same type of shit. Like, it's like, you went from like doing actual scary violence, right? They fucking, you know, put a plastic bag around Danielson. That was awesome. They fucking murdered Chuck Taylor. That was great, right? And now we're sort of duct taping people and not actually hurting them. Like, that part I'm so confused by. Like, you know, like, even if you want to say like,
yeah, it's like, how are you doing this? How is this you? Like, it's
right. Like, how do you think good? Like, who backstage is like, yeah, that works. That's great. We should totally be doing that. Like, this is terrible.
Like, exactly. When you talk about like you talked about like the podcast with Jericho, like I read his book, like,
yes.
And he clearly thinks about things a certain way, and he's doing like the opposite. I mean, I hated the whole show long angle that they did last night, which we're recording this on a Thursday afternoon. Like, the whole angle where like, I hate the whole title belt in the briefcase. That's stupid. I hate like, they stole the briefcase, and like, Copeland is gonna hit the briefcase, which presumably holds the AEW world title, although we've never seen it. He's not gonna open the briefcase. He's gonna hit it with a really cartoonish weapon.
Right.
And
here's what I think of the AEW title. Yeah. Boom, boom, boom. Well, it certainly looks like you fucking hate it, dude.
And Moxley was like,
No, that title means so much to me. Like, don't you dare do it. I'll give you your match. Like, it's such bullshit. I hate it so much.
It's just dumb. And like, it doesn't have any meaning. And that's why when we talk about the stuff where like, you're saying like, you have all these guys who are younger, right? You look at like, oh, we could have had heel Hangman as a champion, right? Because it's not like this stuff is good, right? It's not like this stuff is interesting or different or like even being executed well. Right? Like you could say, okay, we're going to go with this trope and we're going to have this heel group and it's going to be the run-ins and all that other stuff, but at least you're executing it well and there's an emotional core and there's somebody to root for. There's nobody fucking to root for in this. They've made everybody involved look stupid. And that's the thing that I think I'm more than anything else disappointed in Moxley in. He never made his opponents look stupid the way he has during this title run, right? The way he set up his babyface opponents to just look like fucking idiots. That's never something he did before. Like, you look back, the difference between his match with Orange Cassidy at All Out 2023 and the setup and the way that they set that up and the build to that match and the build to the match that they did at Full Gear, right? And it was like, it's like night and day in terms of like, wow, the first one was incredible and the second one was shit. And that's the part that I'm most disappointed in. Like, there's no coming back from that. Like, how do you rehabilitate a character when that happens to them?
Yeah, and every single week, the setup being like two guys are wrestling, someone from the Death Riders, someone not versus someone from the not from the Death Riders, it could be anyone. Waiting for a ref bump or whatever, then the Death Riders come down. They're out there for like as long as a few minutes, doing all sorts of nefarious stuff, and then the babyface cavalry comes down, which right. Of course is a long term wrestling trope. But it's like every single week, this is what we do.
Yep.
And it's not creative or exciting to see that every single week. It feels very WWE too, which is like everything is just geared towards the pop, that pop of the baby faces running down right. To save from the heels, as opposed to making the baby faces look smart or intelligent, which is like, right. Well, maybe I should have my friends at ringside to make sure that like Marina Shafir doesn't get involved or Wheeler Yuta doesn't run into the ring. Like,
right.
That's what the smart baby faces would do. And I would say AEW historically, one of the most refreshing things about it, as you said, is that the baby faces have not been stupid. Right. I really like Hangman Page, like when he was a baby face, his character was almost basically like he's the baby face, but he's smart. So he doesn't like do a bunch of stupid stuff. Right. I think it's okay for some baby faces to be stupid. Like Eddie Kingston, I think, is a good stupid baby face because yes. He's super emotional, which leads right. Him to being irrational. And people know you can, fire him up. So he tries to fight like 700 people at once. Right. And that kind of makes him more endearing. But those characters are few and far between.
Even Darby with like his devil may care attitude where like he doesn't care about the physical danger he puts his body in. Like that's a character trait. You can set that up and be like, okay, like that, you know, you can work with that in such a way that you put them in situations where they end up on the underneath because of their character traits. Right. But when you set it up like that,
even Darby, I would just say is like,
he's not stupid.
Yeah, like Darby and Sting were outsmarting their guys most of the
time. Yes, yes, yes. But like, that's where I'm like, you know, Darby's going to get in a situation where like, you know, men of the year are going to toss him down the stairs in a body bag, right? Because he's, you know, that's Darby, right? Like, I don't know. Like, that's the part where I think that's where everything just falls apart. And I think now that they've actually got like a couple of, looks like they got a couple of hot feuds going, right? Like Ricochet and Swerve, I've really enjoyed. I've thought that's been excellent and different, right? Ricochet is different. You want to talk about stale acts that have recreated themselves. He's not the same guy. You have potentially, last night Hangman and MJF was the most interested I've been in fucking MJF in years, right? Years. And that was actually good. You have all this shit happening. Like, you know, the main event shit's going to just be the least interesting thing on the card.
Yeah, well, it's a black cloud that's hanging over the company at this point, because as you just said, I actually think the creative outside of this whole Death Riders thing has been pretty strong in terms of what they've built and the current feuds. And when we get to Revolution, we're going to have a bunch of hot matches, and then we're going to have the main event. I mean, you mentioned Swerve versus Ricochet. Like, again, I don't want to say like people like Swerve, MJF, and Hangman, it's not like they've been afterthoughts. They're doing stuff. So yeah. It's not like they're off doing nothing. But like Swerve versus Ricochet, good feud. They're going to have probably match Revolution. That's been really good.
MJF and Hangman. I've kind of gone back and forth, like the MJF, like Jeff Jarrett, Dustin Rhodes, like, oh, he's feuding with old guys. But now that's kind of setting up him to feud with Hangman. That's good. I like that.
Yeah. Pivoting like, on that helped them all a lot.
Right.
Like, if we had had to be suffering through Jeff Jarrett and fucking MJF now, I'd like.
Yeah, like if that was a pay-per-view match. Like,
kill me. Kill
I
guess, me.
I think it's probably, it could still be. You never know when Double J is going to pop back up. Get another payday. But, you know, that's good. You have the Kenny Omega and Will Ospreay forming like a super team to fight Takeshita and Kyle Fletcher. Wow, that's great. I can't wait for their tag match, I'm sure.
Yep.
Really excited about that. You have...
Excited to see what it leads to.
Yeah. Whether or not you, like, personally enjoy the Toni Storm or IMA or the Mercedes Moné and Harley storylines and fuse, those are at least, like, competent,
yes,
constructed, long-term,
well executed, like, yeah, there's, even if they're not perfect, there's something there that's good,
right? Those are real feuds, personal conflicts between these individual people,
right?
Like, that's good creative. Like, I guess the Hurt Syndicate is in a feud right now, necessarily like a big feud right now. They're kind of setting, still establishing them as tag team champions, but at least are a very clearly established clean act that's been presented. So like, I think everything outside of the main event really that gets TV time is seems to be getting over to a degree, to various degrees, and has had consistent creative thought put into it. And then you have this main event that's kind of holding everything up because it's so bad.
It is kind of amazing, like, you know, to just look at it and be like, how could so many intelligent people who are not bad at wrestling and have track records of being good at wrestling create something that's so awful and is getting so much television time? I do think that they have tried to switch it up recently. They went from like, we had a run of weeks and weeks and weeks where it was the show closing heel heat angle. And they've tried to mix that up. Like last week, the brawl opened the show, right? There was less of the kidnapping black bag type stuff and more like, you know, they moved away a little bit from that. This week, they did try something different. I think it was still more clown shoe type bullshit, but it wasn't, you know, the same heel heat, like.
At least the baby faces were smart.
Right. They tried something. They tried to let them do something. But, you know, and it does seem like they've pivoted away from FTR, and it's they've given Cope Jay White as a partner in this, and FTR are going to go back to the tag division now that they don't have to worry about putting Private Party over. But yeah, like, I think there's like, I'm much more happy when there's at least a couple things on the show that I can enjoy. And right now I'm looking at Dynamite and I'm like, okay, there's going to be at least a couple things on a Dynamite that I'm going to enjoy. It was a very bleak fucking period in like December and January for this promotion where I was like, why am I tuning in?
Yeah. Well, I think the whole four-way feud was really like really awkward in the sense, like, you had Orange, who had kind of already done the singles program and lost.
Yep.
And so it was like, okay, why is he still kind of around the four-way
right.
feud? And, like, I guess the story they wanted to tell was, like, you know, Moxley is going to come out of this four-way match because these guys all have their own personal shit that's going to get in the way. Like, White, Jay White and Hangman aren't going to be able to, I guess, like, cohesively work on beating up Moxley because they're feuding with each other. But they're also it's a four-way match. So they're actually also wrestling each other.
Right.
So that didn't really make a lot of sense to me. I also thought it was just a total waste of where Hangman's character is to just toss him into the main event and make him a world title challenger. Like, that should be Hangman challenging again for the world title should be like a major, major thing that you build towards, not right. just like a throwaway on your B pay-per-view in a four-way match.
Well, they made very late changes to that program and that pay-per-view, like, set up, and like they were making changes to it, like, you know, even the week before. So I don't think they didn't put a lot of thought into it. And I think that's what was so frustrating about it was, like, again, all of the thought that went into it was about how are we going to set it up for Copeland's return, not how are we going to best serve these characters and best serve this particular feud that we're doing for this pay-per-view. And that's like, that's why it was such an infuriating, like, of everything that's happened that lead to that pay-per-view is probably the thing that pissed me off the most. Because it made no sense for so many of those characters, and it made them look stupid.
What's going on with Copeland's name too? Like, he's Cope, he's Adam Copeland. Like, it seemed like for a few weeks when he came back, he was like, literally, I'm just going to be Cope. Please just call me Cope at all times. And now they're working Adam Copeland back into it a little bit. That was bizarre.
It was bizarre, and it's so stupid. Like, I think people just refused to call him Cope. They were like, it sounds dumb. We're not doing it. Like, you know?
Yeah, Copeland was fine. Copeland was fine.
It's like, fine.
It was almost like, he's like, I've gone by one syllable my whole career. I just need to go back to being by one syllable now. So I'm just going to be Cope.
Okay.
And I was like, Excalibur's like, this man's gone by many names. I'm like, he's gone by two names.
Yeah.
Like, that really anyone's ever heard of.
Yeah, that was weird.
Wasn't he like Sexton Hardcastle?
Sexton Hardcastle.
Like, as an indie wrestler or something. But he goes by Cope. And I was like, what the fuck? No one's gonna call him that. Like, and so I think they abandoned that, but it was also kind of just part of this confusing thing. Someone mentioned it to me, like, it does feel like parts of AEW are old WWE wrestlers excited to do things that they couldn't do while Vince was in charge.
Yep. I think that's pretty clear. Or like could do without being worried that someone's going to tell them no.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think you can see that with some folks. And I think you can see not just wrestlers. I think there's people backstage that are kind of in that position too.
Yeah. And like, it's not necessarily bad stuff, but it's also the wrong mentality.
Right.
To have, which is, these are wrestlers who are coming into a new company that's trying to establish itself. And the mentality should be, how can I leverage my star power to make this company better? And ultimately, like, I would just say from like a selfish perspective, he would say, if I can do that, I'm going to be seen as more valuable, as opposed to being like, this is a blank slate for me to kind of do whatever I want and make a lot of money. And it's not the kind of team first mentality that the company needs from its people in that position.
Well, I think you also have a big change too with AEW, where like when AEW started, it was like, we're going to have a home and a place where we can watch wrestlers that like Vince McMahon doesn't think are big enough or tough enough or whatever. Yeah. And now AEW is a place where you go to watch WWE guys that the, you know, TKO doesn't think are marketable anymore, or that they don't want to pay. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know, like you're not seeing fresh new talent. And if you are seeing fresh new talent, they're taking a back seat to, or looking stupid by, you know, like people who've been on TV for years and years and years, you know? So like, that's one of those things that I think is really frustrating in watching it, is you can see that shift. And like, I definitely agree with you in terms of like, I don't want to get into the place of like, oh, it's this person's fault or it's that person's fault. Cause I, you know, I do think there is something to be said for the fact that AEW hired a lot of people to work in backstage roles who came from WWE and TNA and have this things changed in terms of presentation of baby faces and the way they got heat, and sort of reverted to like a more formulaic, old school, shitty way of doing things.
Mm-hmm. And that's highlighted by the Death Riders as being the biggest example of that.
Lately. Yes. That like, you know, we're doing like Scooby-Doo bullshit. Like, we're duct taping people, and like, you know, we're cutting unintelligible promos, and we're not letting, you know, people talk in case they might, you know, like
And that has been ultimately, I think, one of the reasons a lot of people are frustrated by this. And to me, I think the most frustrating thing to me though remains like how good the AEW roster is and how many exciting people they have. And that this storyline has kind of kept things in a stranglehold.
Right.
In a lot of ways, and we're not getting anywhere cool or exciting during a time period where I think it's clear the company needs to rebuild certain things.
Needs to rebuild. And also there's WWE is not going to stay hot forever. You can see the impending downturn coming, right? You just have to look at some of the shit they're doing right now, the Raw ratings decreasing, all that shit. And it's like, okay, we have an opportunity here where, you know, things are naturally going to go up and down as they used to. Like, maybe we could hit on a hot program and do that and like be focused on something along those lines instead of the same old bullshit that you would see on the other channel.
Yeah. And I also think like we've seen so many jumps, like people from WWE showing up in AEW, that the energy that comes from those people jumping isn't there anymore.
Right. Right.
Like Moxley showing up at AEW. Oh, holy shit. Like,
yeah.
One of the best moments in like wrestling history in the last 20
years. Yes.
But even now, if you had like the equivalent Moxley star like Cup showing up in AEW, I don't know if it would really be that big of a deal.
Right.
Because we've seen it happen a lot. We kind of know what to expect with a lot of these wrestlers that come. There'd be a lot of apprehension because like some of these people have come over from WWE and they haven't gotten it and they become malcontents and they become annoying. They just,
well,
released a couple of them earlier this week.
Well, and you also look at it and you go, oh God, like who's my favorite going to lose? Which one of my favorites is going to lose TV time to this guy?
Right.
Who's going to have to put this guy over?
Yeah, and it's a big difference when you're starting from scratch like AEW was when Moxley first came in, or like the first year where you're just trying to figure out, okay, we signed a lot of young, unproven talent. Some of these guys, like Darby Allin, are going to succeed. Some of these guys, like Joey Janela, aren't.
Right.
And so you're kind of testing things out, trying to figure it out. So it made more sense. The more established guys you bring in, the more helpful that is in at least establishing something. But now, like you said, we're at the point where it's like, okay, they just signed this person's now going to get a lot of TV time. Is that going to, who's going to be odd man out? Is it going to be one of my favorite wrestlers? Is it going to be one of the younger wrestlers that have been exciting to see kind of in the undercard?
Yep.
What's going to happen with that?
Right.
And that's also become a substantial issue with when people make those jumps.
Right.
Like, and I wasn't a fan of Copeland originally coming to AEW. I did not like the way his work was in WWE. I thought he was like when he was doing like his thespian performances and his run before he got injured. I thought I was like, you know what? He was really good. His matches were good. His promos were controlled and normal. He did the whole thing with Christian and then he did the big cage match with Malakai Black. And I was like, you know, all that was good. And since he's come back, like his performances aren't bad, but they're also kind of confusing. Like you mentioned, I know you went over it a lot, like blow for blow in the episode with on Trish and Sarah with about like Copeland's weird promo where he's like talking about how like he paved the way and he wrestled 200 matches a year and Moxley
do that. Yeah.
Like Moxley is the guy who didn't earn anything. And it's like, what a terrible babyface promo it is to do that.
Right.
Where it's like the fans now might boo Moxley because he's a heel. But the fans respect Moxley.
Right.
Right. He's not like, if he said that to cut the promo to like MJF or something, like it makes a little bit more sense.
Sure.
But Moxley is the Iron Man of AEW in a lot of ways.
Yeah. It that's the thing that I find so baffling is that for all the people you have working backstage, nobody looks at some of this stuff and says, time out. This doesn't make sense. Like, can we stop for a second and like maybe look, you know, creatively look at this? Can we talk about like what you're, you know, and that's not just a Copeland thing. Like you can point to a lot of promos in AEW. Like Darby Allin is a good example of somebody who does this a lot where you're like, hang on a second. This doesn't work for your character and who the audience likes. Like, why are we saying this? Let's start to focus on something else. Right. It just, it feels like there's no editor there and it hurts a lot of these feuds. And I think it hurts a lot of the wrestlers. Like, what do you think the story is here? And how are you communicating that to me? If you think the story is that Moxley doesn't appreciate the older generation, that seems to be radically different than what you've presented to me on screen for the last 2 months. Mm-hmm. You know, have you talked to him about this? Like, is he as confused as you are about what the fuck is going on and how confused we are about what the fuck is going on? And like, I've said this, the meta bullshit doesn't help anybody. Nobody gives a flying fuck about what's going on backstage. Nobody cares. Nobody wants it in their fucking program. Like, enough is enough is enough with it, okay? Stop telling us in promos that the promotion is bad and that the things are not good at AEW. Stop saying that in promos!
I mean, and that's part of the issue with, like, the whole soul for AEW fighting, which I'm sure it's been put on hold, I guess, with Copeland feud.
It feels like it has.
I feel like it's going to come back at some point. Which again, like, if you're a typical AEW fan, maybe I am not a typical AEW fan in terms of like probably the amount of content I'm consuming related to pro wrestling. But I want to point out like being an AEW fan, like you're kind of exhausted by negative narratives about the company.
Yes.
Whether accurate or not, it's a really frustrating experience. And it's like, when I turn on the show, I don't want to hear about oh, the company used to be good, we're going to restore the feeling, or the soul of AEW is online, we're ruining AEW, all that kind of stuff. And I was like, man, I want to get away from this when I'm watching the product, because there's already so much working against this company from like a narrative perspective that's coming from outside of AEW. It certainly does not need to come inside AEW.
Why do all the feuds that you mentioned before, right, that are good right now, Tony and Mariah, Harley and Mercedes, MJF and Hangman, Swerve and Ricochet, why are they good? Because they're just feuds between people who are fighting and they don't like each other, right? Or they have a specific issue. It's not about some giant, you know, interdimensional third party narrative discussion of the, you know, truth and reality in our society. It's just, I don't like this person and I want to beat him up. That's it.
I want to best this person in a contest of grappling skill.
Exactly. Exactly. Right.
That's the Harley Monet feud in a vacuum.
Yes, that's it.
Puppets or anything, but it ultimately is rooted in, this is a feud about some person who wants to beat this person in this fake mock athletic competition
to prove that they're the best universe. Or to prove that they're good. That's it.
Like, right? That's my big proponent of, like, this is what makes wrestling cool and unique, is that, like, this is why I was always like against the Fiend, and this is the argument that I would always present, which is like, what makes wrestling cool and unique is that it is all of these personalities and characters who are all wrapped up in this contest of this faux athletic competition, trying to prove that they are better than anyone else. And that's defined by beating them in wrestling matches.
Right.
That's what makes wrestling unique and interesting, with the various characters and things like that. And like, I was like, the Bloodline and like Cody and Roman Reigns as world champion, like, one of the reasons I did think that was as effective as it ended up being was because Roman Reigns was the world champion and his dominance and presence was symbolized by the fact that he had the title and no one could beat him for the title. And like the whole motivation between whether he was, when he was feuding with Jey Uso, whether he was feuding with Sami Zayn, or when he eventually lost to Cody, was like, I'm going to take this thing that says you're the best from you.
Right.
And it wasn't, like, was there tons of melodrama and stuff I didn't care about in it? Sure. But like, I think one of the reasons it was so effective was because at the end of the day, it was about proving that you are the best. And it wasn't about, they could say, oh, it's about being head of the table or anything like that. All of that didn't matter because that was all symbolized by the title. As opposed to
very personal.
Like, it's also like, just kind of funny because we've been complaining about how it's ruining the company. But like, when they talk about like, oh, Moxley and the Death Riders, they're destroying AEW. And it's like, they're destroying AEW? Like
how?
Yeah. Like, Moxley, I guess, has the title, which is makes him important. But like, it's not like, like the idea of that, like, we're destroying the entire company. Like, if you want to do that kind of angle, it has to be like an NWO level like thing where like they're involved in every match. They've got a stooge on commentary. Like, you just have to go whole hog where like the entire company is literally being ruined by this group. It's, if you want to sell that as a storyline,
it's why it worked better, even though people disliked it, is why it worked better when the Elite were doing it, because they were fucking executive vice presidents and there was at least a point there, right?
Yeah.
They could ruin the company because they did have those positions and they could fuck around with the company more. Like, I think they should have leaned in more to that and like actually tried shit. But like, you know, they walked away from that very quickly because they seemed to be afraid of it, which is fine. Like, you know, you don't want to do it. But if that at least made more sense. Like, when you say like Moxley's like, I want to, you know, restore the soul of AEW, help the soul of AEW. Like, how is fighting someone in a wrestling match doing that? Right? Like, how exactly is that doing that? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess the argument would be like, he wants to raise the standard of everyone else. So like, he's setting the standard.
But he keeps cheating.
Yeah, well, that's the irony, is that he's full of shit, which I guess is the heat, right? Which is like, the heat is...
But it's dumb. It's not even good heat. It's stupid heat. Like, you know, like, again, the Elite already did that, where they were the fucking belt collector and all that shit. Like, you know, like, I think that's the part where I keep going back to this. And whenever I think I'm being too harsh and I'm like, you know, again, no piece of art, no piece of media is flawless. And I'm not expecting perfection from wrestling. I think the thing that frustrates me the most is that so many of these are basic story beats that AEW has proven time and time again that they're capable of executing at least with more competence than what they've shown here.
Yeah. You don't watch Dragon Gate, do you?
No.
Okay. So Dragon Gate is doing a very similar storyline in which Yamato, who's an established veteran, he's like 40, has been their world champion for a long time. I would say he's probably been champion since the spring. And his in Dragon Gate in the years before Yamato was champion had been spending a lot of time investing in like making new stars their world champion, trying to establish the order. And Yamato got the world title, and his basically his character since then has been like, I don't think the younger guys have really stepped up. They've gotten this title, but they haven't really earned anything. And I'm going to be the champion. I'm going to show them all. This is what a champion is really like. And if someone wants to rise up and beat me, they can try, but they're going to have to really earn it. And it's kind of like, it's coming from a place of like heel arrogance, but there's a twinge of also like, I'm doing this for the good of the company. I'm doing this for the future, where like I'm going to set the standard and everyone else, someone who's going to try to beat me is really going to have to accomplish something when they beat me. And he's not like you doing interference in his matches. Like he's really beating these guys. And I feel like it's been a way more effective telling of the same story, which is like, yeah, like I'm the old veteran guy. I don't really need to have the championship if we're talking about like progressing this company, but I've been me personally as a heel, I've been unimpressed with what I've seen from these other guys. And now I've got the title. I'm going to show them what a real final boss is like.
Right.
And it's been way more successful, I would think, and palpable as a fan watching these matches, because you do feel like it's kind of based in reality, which is like Yamato is an established guy who's been around for years and years, and he feels more like a world champion than like the 26-year-old guy that they put the title on previously.
Yeah.
And all of that comes across well when you're watching the product, as opposed to Moxley. It's like this real backwards feeling, which is, and at the same time, Moxley is like, I am going to reshape AEW by being a champion. It's like, it's just, and none of it's been successfully followed up on. It's not explained. It's just really, really frustrating to watch it happen when, again, there's so much other stuff and potential going on in the company.
Right. And so many other people who, you know, have shown they can be a little bit more creative and more interesting in how they present stuff and the way they, you know, explore these storylines or, you know, conflicts between characters. I don't know.
And it really is critical to the company overall on how people feel about their main event picture. Like in terms of like how the people feel direction of the company. Like I would push back on any thought like, oh, Tony's lost the plot. No one knows what the booking is anymore. I would say like, well, hold on. Like, look at what else is happening in this company. Like there's a lot of strong, good stuff happening. But the issue is that people will see what's happening with the world title and be like, what the fuck is this? And it works the opposite way too. If the world title picture is really good, people will forgive anything that's going on in the mid-card. We've seen that with WWE, where WWE, for the most part, has gotten their main event stuff right. But like, it doesn't really matter if there's nothing else that exciting happening anywhere else, because people remember with the mid-card. I mean, New Japan's glory period like was like regularly featured just like Gedo like butchering the tag division booking, butchering the junior heavyweight title, like all the mid-card titles, like screwing around with them, getting rid of some, adding new ones, like all that stuff. But like no one really cared, because like, man, you had Okada and Tanahashi and Naito and Omega in the main events, and all of that was good. Like when you nail wrestling is like when you're selling the vibes of a promotion, it's really about nailing the big picture things. And right now, AEW is doing itself a big disservice by not getting that right when you have a lot of other positive stuff happening in the company.
Right.
This is the best the women's division has ever been from a, like, you could take, like, I know the Tony stuff's not for everyone, I know the Harley stuff's not for everyone, but when you're just talking about like establishing characters, establishing champions, having other stuff happening, like this is the best that division has ever been by a mile, and it blows away whatever WWE is doing.
For so many years, like for how many years, AEW Women's Division was the world champion and the person who was challenging her for that pay-per-view cycle. And that was it. There was nobody else on television. They weren't doing anything else, right? And now you have multiple storylines, you have factions, you have like a mid-card and like a lower card for like, the, you know, not everything is perfect. And I do think they need to like not get stale in terms of like, you know what I mean? Like I think... I don't know that Mercedes should lose the belt to Harley per se, but I do think Mercedes probably needs to lose the belt sooner rather than later, because I think it'd be interesting to see her not on top for a little while. But I just think that, like you said, there's so many more storylines, there's so many more wrestlers, there's so much more happening with that women's division than ever was before. They're getting so much more time than they ever did.
Right? Yeah, I mean, there's still a limit on how much TV time they've gotten, but like, yeah, you look at, okay, we've got heading into Revolution, or I guess we're heading into this Brisbane show this weekend. It's like, we've got Tony and Mariah.
Yep.
Which is a very, very, very long-term booked storyline.
Yep.
Obviously, it's probably the longest booked storyline in wrestling when you consider like when they introduced Mariah pairing her with Tony.
Yep.
And then you have this Harley Monet stuff, which is not a long-term, which is the opposite. It hasn't been booked for a long-term feud, but as far as like setting up a challenger on a few weeks' notice has been effective in telling a story. Yep. About what this kind of match is going to be. It's not going to be an epic, huge final blow-off match like Tony and Mariah feels like it's going to be, but it's still an effective, creative enterprise and gives someone like Harley a chance to get a moment that will hopefully elevate the rest of her career. She's going to wrestle in front of a big crowd in her hometown, all that kind of stuff. And then you also have stuff like, I liked that they're doing, like, okay, we're going to do this Megan Bain, Chris Statlander feud. That's like, yep, outside of, there's no titles involved or anything like that, but it is a like basic, simple feud. It looks like Thunder Rosa and Penelope Ford are also going to be there involved in a little bit. So you're getting these other people on screen that isn't just, like you said, the champion of the title picture. But are people going to be talking about that much? No, they're going to be talking about the Death Riders, because that's what sets the tone for the rest of the company.
Yeah. I think they just have to be careful with the women's division, that they don't end up doing what they've done with the men's division, where it's like there's a ceiling on what you're going to be able to do, and there's a ceiling on, you know, how much TV time you're going to get. And like, if you're not in a feud with the two champions, you know what I mean, that you're not doing as much. And I think losing Rampage hurts them in this, because they did do a lot of women's stuff on Rampage, right? So, you know, that's one of the things I do think it's significantly better, but I think it still has to continue to improve.
Yeah. I think the problem with the men's division is, we talk about like Moxley being stale, Copeland being a known entity, is like, you have all these people you're paying a bunch of money to that kind of need to be on every pay-per-view show. So that churn, it's harder to get to. As the women have almost the opposite, with the exception of Mercedes, who kind of always needs to be in a featured act.
Right.
You have kind of open opportunities for people to get a shot on top, as opposed to in AEW, it's like you add all these people. So it's like, now you always need to have something, like if you're coming up on a pay-per-view cycle and the person's healthy and they haven't been written off TV for whatever reason, you always need something for John Moxley to do. You always need something for Chris Jericho to do. You always need something for MJF to do. You always need something for Hangman to do. You always need something for Swerve to do. You're always getting something for like Bobby Lashley to do. You're always going to need something for Kenny Omega to do when he's around. You always need something for Will Ospreay to do. Like, there's not that much space for anyone else to get on like a pay-per-view card, because these guys are all have something to do, because you have these people you've invested a lot in, and there's not a healthy enough churn. Like, obviously, CM Punk like taking a flamethrower and torching the whole company wasn't good for AEW, but it did create a new opportunity for someone to step into. Cody leaving again wasn't really a good thing for the company, in the long run, certainly. But like, it created a new opportunity for somebody to step up. Kenny Omega being out for a year, again, not great for the company, but did create an opportunity for you to step up. And it's hard to do that when you just have so many established people that are demanding time just from a financial investment.
I think that's true. I think they have gotten better in terms of like, you're not seeing with the more pay-per-views that they have, you are seeing people skip cycles sometimes more than you did like, you know, for a long time. I think more people should switch companies. I think it's better. I think it gives people better opportunities to like have new, fresh opponents or two types of stuff. I think the problem comes from when they switch companies and show up with the same stale presentation, right? And they don't do anything different. And especially in the case when you've been with somebody, when you've been someone who's been on WWE that was on TV longer, that like has been like the industry leader, like I think that becomes a bigger issue. And that's, I think, what's ultimately hurting, where when people right now going from AEW to WWE feel fresh because you know, that audience isn't watching them, right? Whereas people who are watching AEW have seen a lot of these guys already and have, you know, if you're not going to show us something new like Ricochet or Swerve, like, then why are you bothering, right? We're just, it's more of the same. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously you don't want to have a hard and fast rule about
like, no.
Any WWE guys.
Well, no, because then you end up missing out on people who are willing to do the change, right? And that's where it becomes challenging. And that's the tough part about like talent relationships is like, how do you know what person is going to be willing to do something different? And how do you know which person's going to just be like, I'm all set. Thanks. This is my gimmick.
Yeah. And everything comes, you know, everything comes on a case by case basis. Like, I'll bring up like the Hurt Syndicate again. Like, okay. These are two guys who've been on national TV for two decades. They're both well over 40 years old. We're going to bring them in and we're going to have them basically do the same gimmick they were doing in WWE. Like that violates a lot of like hard and fast rules you would want to set for acquisitions. But I would argue they're coming in with momentum of they feel like it feels like something WWE fumbled. So your fan base might be more excited to see what they're going to do in a place that doesn't have WWE's issues. And it's also serving a niche, which at this point is something that WWE is not doing, which is we're going to have like a really identifiably black staple. And that is something that we're at least seeing that WWE is really underserving that section of fan base. Okay. So I feel like on paper, you'd be like, oh, the Hurt Syndicate, like you would never want to bring them in. Like that's like violates all the rules. I was like, guys, I love Shelton Benjamin. You know, I loved him when I was a little kid. He's really athletic and all that kind of stuff like that. It's like, I don't need to see Shelton Benjamin in AEW. Like, there's no value there. And I'm like, now I see Shelton Benjamin. Like, Shelton, I'm not digging this Shelton Benjamin. Like, he's been so much better than I thought he was going to be. But at the same time, like, that's not a progressive action, bringing in Shelton Benjamin and Lashley and having them squash a bunch of people.
I am in agreement with everything you said. Like, I can't stress it enough.
That's why you're on the show. You know.
I just am a little bit nervous because I worry about the shelf life of an act like the Hurt. Mm-hmm.
And then what are you doing with them? Because you signed them to a presumably multi-year contract.
Right. They hurt people. Right. They're going to squash a bunch of, not squash, but they're going to decisively beat a bunch of tag teams. And then what do? You know? Like, that's the part where I'm like, this is, you know, let's enjoy it while it's happening. I'm not saying no to it, but I just, you know, I'm maybe a little bit more pessimistic on that.
Do you feel like, this is just a projection, obviously, do you feel like some wrestlers, especially people who come from WWE that were in WWE for like 10 or 15 years, then come into a different company, like, as opposed to from the territory days or days where there was a lot more transience between different wrestling promotions, like wrestlers that come in and maybe they understand like, all right, I'm gonna have a run and then it's time to leave the territory, as opposed to guys being like, I want to be here for 10 years and I always want to be doing stuff for 10 years, which in a lot of ways is like an unrealistic expectation for anyone that's not an absolute top star.
I think that there are wrestlers who think about their character and their progression as a character, right? Mm-hmm. And are able to take what has happened to them and their opponents and sustain a through line, right? Regardless of what feuds they're in. And that these guys are more, men and women are more successful in modern wrestling than the ones that sort of shrug off, right, what they did. And those are the folks that seem to become more stale, right? Nothing FTR has done has changed them as characters, right? Nothing FTR has done has changed characters. You can look at Swerve. You can look at Hangman. You can look at Orange Cassidy. You can look at Darby Allin. You can name a bunch. The things that have happened to them have changed them, right? And so as a result, when they come back and interact with these characters in the same way, they're not going to interact in the same way. They're going to act in a different way. And it's not boring. Right.
Well, it's rewarding. It's the opposite. It's rewarding to the fan base
for
understanding those things.
Right. So that kind of gets away from like, so that's how you have a career where you're 10 years in the same company, right? Is your character is continuing to evolve and change. And the way that you're interacting with your environment evolves and changes because that person's evolving and changing, right? If you don't ever evolve and change, or you don't envision yourself as a character and you're just like, hey, I'm a tough guy. I'm here to win. Right. Like, you know, FTR's character is they win all the belts and like, that's great, but that's not something that's going to sustain an audience's interest level over a long period of time.
My characters, I win a lot.
My characters, I win a lot. Yeah. My characters, I win all the time. And that's the kind of thing that concerns me about like a Hurt Business, right? Like, this is great for right now. This is where I say, like, you're in.
I believe you mean the Hurt Syndicate.
Hurt Syndicate, sorry. But like, you're here. Like, you're here for 6 months. Like, this is great. Like, you know, but how, like, what's going to be different about you in 6 months that's going to make me interested in seeing you in 3 years, right? That I'm not going to be like, oh, he didn't sign a contract. They went back to WWE. Whew. You know?
Well, I guess my point would be like, we're talking about Lashley and Shelton in particular. And I guess you could throw MVP in too. It's like, these are guys who've been around a long time and they've been in and out of a lot of companies. Right. So part of me thinks they might have the mentality where it's like, all right, I know that we're going to come in and we're going to get a big push. And then eventually things are going to change. Like, we're not going to be champions forever because they're not naive enough to think that. So in some ways, those are people, better people to bring in because they at least understand, like, this is the wrestling business. I come in, I'm going to get a push, going to get moved to the side eventually. I think other people come in and think they're going to get pushed forever. Right. And then when they're not, they get mad. And then they just sit at home playing video games and turn down creative ideas. So I think that's part of the issue as well in the long term when it comes to bringing in these different types of talent.
I mean,
when you talk about, like, people who, like, their characters change and you get these interactions and you do these things where it really helps establish that, which ironically is a lot of the people that we're talking about, like people that we want to see in the main event, get back into the main event picture.
Right.
Instead, we're left with Copeland, basically the same character he's been since he stopped being a vampire.
Well, and then you also have, like, you know, you've got Christian waiting in the wings with his Money in the Bank binder. And it's like, you know.
It's definitely a Money in the Bank binder because they clearly did the gimmick and they don't know what they're going to do with it. So he's just going to have it for a long time, which is in the tradition of Money in the Bank.
I think they knew what they were going to do with it and then things changed and now they're not sure what they're going to do with it. So, like, you know, I think that's one of those situations where it's like, you know, he's also stuck because he can't lose, right? You can't finish the Hook feud because you can't beat Christian because he has the Money in the Bank binder.
Yeah. The Christian thing is funny because Christian works like 3 matches a year.
Yeah.
I've also enjoyed how in all of his matches, he has absolutely no normal offense.
Yeah.
Like, his matches are just like, if I were to ever be a wrestler, which I would be a very bad wrestler, but my only hope of ever making it as a wrestler would be, my idea was to be like, I want to be somebody and I'm going to be a weaselly heel and I want my offense. I'm going to have no real offense. Like, my offense is just going to be like chopping people in the throat, poking people in the eye, like choking people on the ropes. Like, I want to be a wrestler. That's like, Christian has like a few signature, like his finishers. But when you watch him wrestle, like, he does no like actual wrestling. He's like, hey, I'm going to give this guy like a vertical suplex, or I'm going to give this guy like, you know, a side headlock takedown. It's like, his offense is entirely just bullshit heel. And I love it so much.
He's your wrestling avatar.
Like, if I were to have to be a wrestler, if you said, Jesse, you have to be a wrestler for a year, that's the kind of wrestler I would be. I'd be a very bad wrestler. I'm not particularly large and I'm not particularly athletic. I would have like all sorts of issues, like taking bumps athletically and things like that. I 100% cannot be a wrestler.
But if you were, you've thought about it and this is the kind you'd be.
Yeah. Like, if I had to be one, like,
which I respect.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I think I, like, realistically, like, Dominic can be a wrestler, like, almost anyone.
Oh, please. Good old Dominic Mysterio.
Who would your wrestling avatar be?
Oh my god.
Don't tell me you haven't thought about it.
I don't know that I have, to be honest with you, because it's such a thing that I'm like, A, as a woman, it's not like it's not like there's been a lot of women wrestlers that you've been like, wow, this is, you know, I didn't have women wrestlers. I grew up in childhood being like, oh, I'm going to really, you know, strive to be this person.
Could be Sable or, yeah.
Yeah. I loved Stephanie McMahon when I was younger. I just thought, like, that was, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to tell you. Listen, we all have misspent youths.
Okay? I mean, people that are bad wrestlers, you could probably be like, wrestle like Stephanie McMahon. Like, just, that's not a high standard.
Just coast in on nepotism. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not a thing I've really thought about, I guess, in that way.
This is embarrassing.
I'm sorry. I've disappointed you.
Yeah. This is almost as bad as the Yankee fan revolution.
I know you're going to, it's not 4 minutes that you would have turned this off, but.
Yeah. That should have been, that honestly, we should have had this discussion. I was on a date like a week or two ago. And she was from Connecticut. The girl was from Connecticut. So I was like trying to like, I'm like, oh, like she's from like near like Fairfield, like kind of closer to the city. So I knew I was like, so like your parents like Yankee fans? And she's like, yeah, my dad's a big Yankee fan. So, okay. I'm like, try not to react to it, but the fact that I asked if she was Yankee fan probably already gives it away about what my feelings are towards it.
I'm trying not to react to it. Oh my God.
Yankee fan, realistically, if I'm being honest, though, Yankee fans would bother me as much as like Laker fans would actually bother me more because they're much more entitled.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like Yankee fans now are not, it's not the same as it was during the 90s when we just won everything. People hated us. And we were.
No, really... no, it's not. You are certainly not winning everything these days.
No, not for a while. But we're definitely not, you know, it's, we were assholes back then and probably deserved it too. I can't.
Well, people already don't like New Yorkers, let's be honest.
No, which is crazy because we're amazing.
People don't like the idea of New York.
No. We're just going to tell you what we think of you. I don't see why anybody would object to that.
Yeah.
As opposed to New Englanders where it's like trying to drag out, you know, like a hello is like, my God, you want a kidney from me? Why would I use my directional? You don't need to know what I'm doing.
Yeah. One of my friends I play pickup basketball with, he's like born and raised in China. And he was just telling me, he like, I gave him like a ride like twice, which I gave him, the ride was like, I drove him home basically, like, and it was literally on my way home. Like it took a zero extra energy for me to drive up, but he's like so thankful. And he's like, yeah, people are in Massachusetts don't have any patience. Like they like, I can't believe you gave me a ride. I was expecting I was going to have to Uber. And I was like, really? No one like gave me a ride. He's like, no, people here are so rude. And I'm like, I've heard that before. So and he's like, I used to live, I'm like, is it just the America thing or is it like just a Massachusetts thing? He's like, just a New England thing. Like I, when I lived in Utah, people would drive me like 45 minutes, no problem. And I
was
like,
yeah, but they'd talk about him when he got out of the car though.
Yeah.
That's that Midwest nice shit where they pretend to be, you know, oh no, he's like, we can be right. And the second he gets out of the car, they're talking shit.
I always say, I'll defend, obviously people know I'll defend New England to the death. I will, like, New Yorkers or like people from New Jersey or Philly, like I'll pretend to not like them. But if we were really in like a war against the rest of the country, which we very well might be at some point, like we're going to have to stand arm in arm with our Northeastern brethren.
I don't disagree. This is very true.
Because I've always said, like, New Yorkers and New Jersey people, like, they're like brothers that are like basically the same to people on the outside looking in.
Yes.
And they like kind of secretly hate each other. They always hate each other. And like people from Philly and Boston are cousins of the people from New York and New Jersey. But
yes.
They're also very similar, but they're like, oh, those are our crazy cousins from down there. But
yeah.
If we had to get in a fight where the whole family was against somebody else, we know we'd have each other's back.
Exactly. I agree with this. I second this statement.
Yeah. Anyway, that's going to conclude our podcast for today. Sarah, do you have anything you want to plug? I know we've been kind of subtly plugging your show the entire time, so.
No, we just, Trish and I do our podcast. It comes out every other Tuesday. We'll have an episode next Tuesday, which will be the 18th of February. So feel free to tune in if you want to hear us talk about all the news that's fit to print.
I have heard a rumor that you guys have merchandise.
We do have merchandise, which is insane and slightly deranged, but if you feel like you want to own a Trish and Sarah t-shirt, they're available at choppedtees.com.
Yeah, I feel like for a podcast should really lean more, and because everyone, basically every influencer has a shirt at this point. Like any YouTube channel has the shirt and things like that, or basically just printed on a shirt. I really feel like for a podcast and specifically, the podcast industry should be leaning much more heavily. This is a free idea for like the people at Pro Wrestling Tees and Chop Tees and all that kind of stuff. Free idea here. Really leaning into like the stickers.
I don't disagree.
Like stickers people put on their water bottles, stickers, not like people put it on their laptop or their phone case. Like I have like a little, you can't see it right now, but I have like a cork board where I'm just getting started, but I'm going to put stickers on of stuff I like. Like I feel like it's much that's an easier sell than like a shirt or a sweatshirt that people might not want to wear in public.
Tunnel Talk had magnets, which I thought was a genius idea.
Right in the same wheelhouse, right?
Yeah.
That's a perfect idea. That's what I think the industry should be exploiting more than just shirts. Because 99% of wrestling shirts are horrible.
I agree with that. 99% of wrestling shirts are horrible. You can always tell the good ones because people were working with actual artists as opposed to just bullshit.
Well, to me, it's always like, can I get a shirt that's not like a just absolutely gigantic graphic of something?
Or a guy's face.
Yeah, or like a guy's face. Something that just screams like, I watch wrestling. Like, I much more prefer like a subtler issue. NASCAR has the same merch, but same issue, by the way. Like every guy in NASCAR's merch is like full decal of like the driver in his car, and it's like huge block writing, like Chase Elliott, number 9. Like, and I was like, that's like a shirt a, like a 5-year-old would wear,
right?
But like, I'm much more into like a much more subtle shirt that has that, and wrestling's really lacking that.
Well, that's what's so infuriating about FTR being stale is that they've traditionally had some of the best merch and wrestling t-shirts that you can find.
Yeah, I mean, like a lot of the shirts, like the simpler the shirt is, the better almost.
Yes.
Like, I think the Hook shirt is great. The black shirt that just says Hook.
Yes.
It's great because it's a very simple design. And also you could wear that anywhere and people would be like, oh, I wonder what that is. Hook. Like it looks almost like a designer brand of shirt, as opposed to being like a big picture of Hook, the wrestler. Right. Like,
or the stuff John Freese did for Best Friends, like that it had that kind of cartoony quality that you were like, oh, like this is different. Like it's not exactly a wrestling shirt.
But it's not like just
it looks gigantic like
I watch wrestling shirt. Like,
yeah,
this is still an embarrassing, embarrassing hobby that we do not want people to know about.
You're not wrong.
That's the merchandise game. That's not being the people that make merchandise don't seem to understand that.
Yeah.
That this is a hobby that we do not want people to know that we participate in. All right. We'll wrap it up. Thanks a lot, Sarah.
Thank you, Jesse. Looking forward
to finding a reason to invite you back onto the show.
Any time. This was always fun.
Hello, everyone. My name is Taylor.
And I'm Kelly.
And we are the co-hosts of Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. Episodes drop every other Monday, where we discuss the biggest Joshi news, review shows, and preview the hottest upcoming Joshi action.
So whether you're a new fan or an old fan, we've got something here for you at Jumping Bomb Audio.
Check us out on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.